How about that? The NFL draft continues to amaze. Let's shift gears. Starting on Monday, it's the 19th Chicago Improv Festival. The festival's given us great comedy over the years, including headliners like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Upright Citizens Brigade, Key and Peele. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. It really has been one of the highlights of the last 19 years. I mean, every single year, it's something that people seek out. It's back for its 19th year, but this year, as in the last couple of years, it's changed direction, philosophy, and size. Jonathan Pitts, the co-founder of the festival, is with me in studio. Good to see you, Jonathan.
Good to see you, Justin.
All right, how are you? Hold on one second here.
Freud.
Yeah, there we go. No, yes, right. That's right. I full disclosure, I have performed in the Chicago Improv Festival many years. For you, 19 years. I mean, I mentioned some of these people coming through, but right now, I mean, a couple days before the Improv Fest, I mean, you're pretty stressed out.
Yes.
What does it take to run an improv festival in Chicago?
Well, it takes a lot of ambassadorship. Because we're working with so many different theaters. We're working with so much different talent. It's also having to take into consideration the audience, which is part of the reason for the shift in the artistic focus. Because once we got above 100 groups in the festival, it turned into potpourri for the general public. Unless they were related to somebody, they couldn't tell what to pick. Hmm. So I took a page from Milwaukee Summerfest because I love that they have different venues based on different artistic things. So if you want to go see bluegrass, you go to the one bluegrass stage. If you're like, screw that, I want to go hear heavy metal, you go over there. So 3 years ago, we came up with the idea of having different artistic categories within improv. Now, for the average person, they're like, wait, improv is just funny. Yes, it is. But there's so many different types of ways of doing it now, no longer based on size, like here's a duo, here's not. There's all musical groups. There's groups that do genre, like improvised Shakespeare or improvised Twilight Zone. There's groups that do experimental and alternative stuff. There's groups that just like doing short-form games, like on what you see on Whose Line. So it made it a lot easier to come up with these 7 or 8 different artistic categories, mm-hmm. because then somebody who goes to our website can just choose what they want to go see.
What they like to see.
Yeah, and then we set it all up at 1 or 2 theaters, so now it fits your schedule. Like if you're like, I got Friday night available, I can only go see a show at 10:30, but I like improvised music. Now you can just go to MCL Chicago and see that. So it's becoming more audience-friendly, and that in its own way has allowed us to get even bigger.
Let's get back to 1997.
Okay.
This is when you're starting off.
Yes.
Why did you get into the festival game? What was it about? What were you thinking about when you were in Chicago in 1997, and why were you thinking, okay, Chicago needs this?
I would be working. I first got my start on festivals, the International Theater Festival, which was originally created by Jane Nichols Solins, Bernie Solins' wife, and that ran for about 10 years, and I was a production intern, and it was my first introduction to festivals, and I was like, this is amazing to see people from all over the world doing theater work. Later on, I got invited to become the theater and performance curator of the Around the Coyote. And I did that for 7 years,
great festival. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's really where I cut my teeth. And then I started doing other festivals, like the Bailiwick Directors Festival. I did a Shakespeare Festival up in Michigan, and I did a Visual Arts Festival. And so I started doing all these different festivals, and that sort of started becoming my gig. And I was working on a children's festival that Maggie Daly had put together called Magic City, which existed for a couple years. And Frances Callier was working on that. And, of course, that's when Frances and I met. And I was looking at the big festival in America for improv, which at that time was in Austin, Texas, called the Big Stinkin'.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, wait, with Chicago's history of festivals, with Chicago's history of being the mecca and birthplace of this, why is there not a festival in Chicago? So I had the idea. I asked Frances, and she said she'd been wanting to do it for years, but no one would ever do it with her. And then we both agreed we had to be, like, independent. Because, you know,
This town is Second City and Improv Olympic and those kind of places.
So Annoyance and Comedy Store. Right. I always call them like the mafia families. They have claimed their territory and each one, it took them years to get peace, you know, and now so we had to be Sweden. We had to be the ambassadors and embrace every style of improvisation that exists out there and make room for everybody at the tent.
Well, it seemed to me that the Chicago Improv Festival was very what came around at the right time, because right at that time you're talking about some of the entertainers and improvisers that are now household names who are doing American Express commercials were the people who were available
just hanging around
I'd love to be in the festival, so you were able to get an early sort of Upright Citizens Brigade to be on stage. You're able to get Tina Fey and
Seth Meyers, Ike Barinholtz, the names that just go on and on. You look at year three, which is the first year that Shannon Freud played. That's the year that was just stupidly amazing. Jason Sudeikis performed in it. Mm-hmm. There are so many people that performed. Jack McBrayer before he was known, T.J. Jagodowski. You know, part of what I've always felt is with the Chicago Improv Festival, we get people 5 minutes ahead of the curve. We get Key and Peele just before they start shooting their whole season. And then we can't see them again for 5 years. So it's like, if you want to see the people who are just about to hit, you go to CCIF because they're here just before they hit, and then they just blow up.
Yeah, and I would I know this because I was around at that time, and I talked to you at that time about what it takes to put a festival together. But, you know, it's very difficult to get top-notch talent to come back from Los Angeles and New York on your timetable, meaning it's on May 1st or May 2nd, and you're like, I'd love to have the Saturday Night Live cast member, but there's a Saturday show. Yeah. We can't move the festival. There's a lot that
and it's even harder now because in L.A. they're shooting all the time. Because of everything that's happening with cables and everything that's happening with Netflix.
So it used to be you were finding a spot, right?
Yes.
Right.
And now everybody shoots, you know, at different points. Teachers, the group, which is actually the Katie Did,
yeah,
who
right.
was our headliners last year, they're shooting their episodes right now. So, I mean, now in Hollywood, there really is no downtime. The good news is that so many people that we know are in a position to either create shows or are doing shows, and there's so much more work for the people that we know. But in terms of trying to schedule certain...
Does that also factor into the idea to slim it down, to not do the big sort of, you know, huge stages at the Athenaeum where you have all these big headliners?
It's just it's a and huge part of what we also found out, because also it's sort of my job to listen to the artists, and part of what I found out is a lot of the artists were not comfortable in a 950-seat theater. So what I've sort of learned is that the average artist, the really talented artist, someone like a Susan Messing, she prefers to be in what I would call an off-Broadway size house, something that's like 300 seats that's bigger than her normal show. But once you get up to 950, she loses that intimacy and doesn't enjoy it as much. And a lot of the groups felt that way. So I was like, okay, great. There's something about the artists of this work that prefer off-Broadway size venues than Broadway. And then, and I think about it, you know, because what you did with Schadenfreude, every time you guys performed on the main stage in front of 950 people, it was spectacle upon spectacle, which fit that size.
Well, you had to because that was what the venue was.
Right.
Otherwise, you couldn't go in and do your black box.
No, you couldn't. It would you, right.
Let's take a quick break so we can get back on time here. Jonathan Pitts, the co-founder of the Chicago Improv Festival, starts on Monday. It's the 19th Chicago Improv Festival. We'll talk about some of the highlights, what to expect from the festival coming up after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jonathan Pitts is in studio with me, the co-founder of the Chicago Improv Festival, which is celebrating its 19th year, starting Monday. 21 different venues, over 100 different shows. Improv takes over next week. You know, for you, I mean, this I remember with the festival when I did shows earlier, 15. Now it's been 15 years, man. That's crazy to think about.
Right?
But there was a lot of industry.
Yes.
You had, you know, scouts that came out. I know that Seth Meyers
was first seen
by SNL scout on the stage at your festival.
And we We used to have scouting come in from NBC, ABC, CBS. That's also back when there was very few other stations.
Right.
And they used to come, and we used to have to do all we could to take care of them. But, you know, with the growth of like UCB on the East Coast and the West Coast, they don't seem to come out very much anymore, except for the SNL showcases that Annoyance and Second City and IO puts up. So now it seems like if Chicago acts want to get seen, they're making their own webisodes, which is part of why Or they make webisodes and then they move.
Isn't that strange, like, to think about that in 2016 when access is at the fingertips?
Right.
That it's actually become a little bit constrictive, meaning that, you know, like UCB has been able to open up on both coasts and the industry seems to have gotten smaller when the avenues are bigger.
Yes, and it's very odd, too. And it also doesn't make sense to me that more stuff isn't happening in Chicago because you have all those, you know, Chicago Fire, Chicago Police Department, Chicago police shows.
Right.
So if the industry is willing to come here for that, why are some of the other shows that we know that could happen happening?
Maybe it's a precursor to a boom here.
I would love to see that.
You know, for you, I mean, the festival is business. I mean, you know, this is not a it has fluctuated from for profit to not for profit over the years.
Right,
but
right.
I mean, you as an artist, as an improviser, as someone who did production, had to learn how to be a businessman pretty quick, especially surrounding yourself with artists and others who all want a piece of something.
Yeah. And one of the things that I learned is that being a not-for-profit, part of what I say is not everything has to make money, but nothing can lose money. You know, and so there are certain things that we can do for the artistic good of it, either for the art or for the audience, but we can't lose money at it, because if we lose money, we can't keep coming back. And so that's sort of like the overall philosophy with that, rather than how do we get every single penny out of it. But at the same time, we stretch every single dollar, and a lot of it comes from, this is still a passion project for a lot of people, not necessarily the people who work on the Chicago Improv production staff, but the people that we all work with.
Right.
It still ties into passion. It would be hard to operate that way year round, but because it's a 1 week thing, so many people are willing to pitch in.
Right.
You know, it's like the improv equation of raising a barn.
Right. You're the Amish of of Chicago performers.
Yeah, except for everyone's wearing plaid shirts.
Right. He's got a beer in their hand.
That's right.
Doing it, making up stuff.
Right.
Sweeping across the stage.
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the highlights of this festival. Because, you know, one thing that's always interesting about the Improv Festival is, you know, you do go, I mean, you've gone out of your way over the 19 years to bring in international acts, to bring in... I remember the Japanese group.
Yeah, Yellow Man Group.
Yellow Man Group, right. but you've done a lot with cultivating relationships with college
yeah.
I know so many people who have come up to me over the years with Schadenfreude and said, I saw you at the show. I was at this college or that college, and I was coming to the Improv Festival with my troupe. You know, and we saw you there, and I realize there really is a connection to kids, the university level improv, and international.
That's part of the reason why we have a college improv tournament that we do every year. This year we had 136 teams competing in 14 regionals across the country, and then just last Saturday we had our nationals with bracket style 14 teams.
How do you organize that, Jonathan? How do you put that together, man? What are you doing? Like, how do you do that? I mean, you have tournaments in different areas.
Yes, we
like,
do.
You're like the NCAA.
Yes, that's exactly what we are.
For college improv.
Yeah. This year's national champs are from the University of Iowa, and they're called Paperback Rhino. And
when do you sleep, man?
I have insomnia.
All right, so what's the highlight? What are the highlights this week?
Well, this year we've had a lot of records broken. We have 105 shows, over 170 acts, people from 9 countries performing at 21 venues. So... it's so much. Simplest thing is just go to our website, chicagoimprovfestival.org, to check that out. But okay. As far as what I'm excited about.
Yeah, what are you excited about?
I love that on our opening night, we have an all-women's groups. We have Children of a Lesser God with Susan Messing, and we have Rachel. Rachel, and we also have... Emily Candini's coming back.
Yeah.
She performs with them. She's just now signed something. She's going to be taping a new show with Comedy
awesome.
Central.
That's great.
So she's going to be on that
awesome.
There. So we got Rachel
she's
Mason.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, we have a all...
Mason and Messing, I wish I knew who they were. I wish they... They do a lot of bits with us.
Yes,
on
they
the
do.
Show.
And we have also the middle act for that is called Woke AF! Exclamation mark, and it's 5 African American women from the Bob Curry Fellowship who have joined together to improvise.
Okay,
and then we have Virgin Daiquiri. So you know,
another great group. Yeah.
Yeah. So on opening night, it's really nice to be able to showcase that we have these strong, powerful, smart, funny, talented women who are great improvisers. And we're putting them front and foremost.
Jonathan Pitts is the co-founder of the Chicago Improv Festival. And the festival is celebrating its 19th season, I guess you would say.
Sure,
it's
yeah.
The 19th Chicago Improv Festival starts Monday, 21 different venues. What's the website?
Chicagoimprovfestival.org.
Okay, Jonathan, great to see you. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about all the hijinks you and I have been involved with in the last 20 years. We've had some great spectacle theater together.
Well, I'd love to have Schadenfreude come back next year for year 20.
That's right.
Seriously.
Right? That would be fun.
Seriously.
You'd have to get Kate out of L.A. That would be the hard part. And Sandy's in Canada.
If we steal her child, she'll follow.
Jonathan, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks, Justin.